Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Welcome to Crypt Rick's I've Been Thinking. What's this show all about? Well, it's all in the title. He enjoys interviewing people about issues that he finds interesting and which cause him to sit back and think. Cryptocurrency, true crime, natural law, the occult. No topic is off limits here. He has always enjoyed when people give their points of view or thoughts on different topics that they have researched. And what makes it all great is that it's their unique take on what is being discussed. For that reason alone, it makes it interesting to him. So take that walk down to his crypt. Make yourself comfortable. And just maybe, he will be discussing a topic that you have been thinking about. Here's your host, Crypt Rick.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh my God, the start to another week. Can you believe it? I love Mondays. I tell you guys that all the time. And why do I like Mondays? I love it because it's a start to a new week, new challenges, new goals to reach. And that is why I've always been one of those people that annoyingly like Mondays, because most people hate Mondays, right? I hear that all the time. There's even slogans, I hate Mondays. I'm the opposite. I always like it because it's a new week of challenges, and that's how I look at it. And it's like a reset from the previous week. And to me, that is why I like Mondays, as I tell you guys all the time. Thank you guys so much for once again being here, tuning in. I really look forward to this. I tell you, it was a rainy morning, and I was very, very worried because my pain levels were extremely high. But thankfully, through the course of the day, everything worked out, and the rain stopped, which is cool, and it actually got a little bit warmer, and my pain levels went down drastically, and now I'm just feeling amazing. I'm happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to my guests that are coming on. We're going to have a great discussion about some very important topics, and I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be a great one, guys. But before I go ahead and get my guest on, or at least my first guest, just please remember, guys, that here at Revolution Radio, it's listener-supported. It is so important that you guys realize that we would not be here every week, every day of the week, every day of the month, every month, I should say, doing these shows, all us hosts, without your guys' generosity. We just wouldn't be here. And it's because of your guys' generosity that we are. And what is great is you are helping keep freedom of speech alive. We don't have to be censored. We don't have to worry about topics we cover. Everything is wide open here. And to me, that is so important, especially now with freedom on the ropes and truth on the ropes and people being censored. It's crazy. It really is. If you're in tune at all with what is going on in social media land and what they are doing to censor people, it's crazy. And it just seems like you can't think it gets worse, and it just keeps getting worse, and they keep taking more and more away, which I will be doing a show on very soon, because over here in Canada, they are, oh, I tell you, and it's not just here, it's everywhere. They're really clamping down, then they're not going to be happy until there's their agenda and message is the only one getting through. So it's so valuable to have places that we can come to and discuss what we need to and openly without any censorship. And that is why it's worth supporting Revolution Radio, guys, because that is exactly what's happening here. And You want to keep it locally supported. You don't want corporations coming in, because once they start coming in and giving money, then they have a say. And when they have a say, then the agenda kicks in, and then rapid change happens, and not for the good. So, you know, please, let's keep this all between us, local, all listeners supported, so valuable, especially now. Many ways you can donate. Just go to the donation section at the top of the page at revolution.radio. There's so many ways. You got direct pay. There's cryptocurrency, if that's what you do. They cover Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Ethereum. There is definitely Patreon. So if you want to send them out that you donate every month, they got you covered there too. So many, and snail mail. Hey, it works. It's slow, but it gets there. And any donation, it doesn't have to be huge. Any amount helps, and it all adds up, and it keeps us here doing this for you guys every day of the week. And that 24/7, it is unheard of, and it's so important. Great host here doing amazing shows. So thank you guys so much. And I will say it every week like a broken record. Thank you so much, because we truly could not do this without your support. So thank you for everyone who has donated, who is going to be donating. And I'm just so proud to be part of this, and to see people coming together and fighting for truth, because we need it. We need it now more than ever, guys. So with that out of the way, let's go ahead. I want to get this show on the road here. I got two guests that I told you guys last week, if you're paying attention, and I'm excited. I got Chris Jansen coming on in like 2 seconds from End Evil Podcast. And then we also finally will have Leslie Powers on live here. I've played the interviews I've done with her in the past, but I've always told you guys I wanted to get her here live to talk on the show, because she has such wisdom, such great information and insight, and it's so valuable. And I just thought, you know, nothing beats in person, live chatting like that. Videos are great. Pre-recorded interviews, they got their place and they're great, but I still prefer this live, on the spot, the heat of the moment. It's when it all matters. So let's go ahead and first welcome Chris Jansen. Welcome back, my friend. You've been here before, so you're no stranger to this show.
What's up, Rick?
I'm happy
Thanks
to
for
have
having
you,
me, man. Good to be here.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward. We're going to get Leslie on. She is reaching out. We got some great topics. I got a few bullet points I was letting you know about, and then you and Leslie got some great stuff that we're going to be covering. So this is going to be a really important show, where I think that in the 2 hours that we have, a little less, we're going to try to dive into this. And I was telling you that my mind has kind of been really on self-growth and how important it is, and then the difference between self-growth and forced growth, and then value. I think that that's a thing that a lot of people, I don't really think, spend a lot of time thinking about. The value, what is value? And then especially, what value do you have to society, to yourself? I think we're going to be able to really dive into this. And I know you got great points too that you want to get into.
Yeah, Rick, value is such a big deal now from my point of view. You know, it's funny, you go through this process of realization and frustration and anger when you come to realizations about the problems around us on this planet and with people. And then when you get to the point where you're sick of being frustrated and mad, you start deciding to do something about it. You know, you formulate a plan. And so ever since I started becoming, you know, making the podcast, it forced me to really think out, like, okay, number one, why aren't people understanding what I'm talking about when I'm talking about it? And number two, how do I make a point in some sort of thoughtful progression that makes sense? And it keeps bringing me back to the importance of understanding value. And I think one of the biggest tricks of our modern world and the psyche of your average human being out there wandering around in this modern world is the fact that our interpretation, our viewpoint of value is so askew, it's so off, mm-hmm. that it's like we're living in a non-reality. A lot of people are living in a non-reality, not understanding how much value they really contain in their own being and the worth of it. If they did, they would not act the way they do. That's for sure.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, I like, that's what I was saying just at the beginning here, Chris, is that, I mean, how often do you really think about value? I mean, it was something I just started thinking about, like really focusing on recently. And you bring up great points. Like, I'm just thinking, when I think about value, it's a simple word when you hear it, value. What do you mean by value? And what kind of value do I bring to whatever we're speaking about, whether it's yourself, a relationship, society? I mean, and it all it's just, it's such a, I think, it, like you said, it's a big word. It's like a broad topic, but it's something I think people need to hone in on, because how often do you think about that? I mean, how often do you really sit down and think, what value do I have? And maybe some people even struggle thinking they have no value. And you make a great point that we all do, like, somewhere, you know?
Well, here's why I think it's pretty much the most important topic to start with. You know, eventually where it came about was when I wanted to make a presentation series, I was like, where do I start? You know? And yeah. I realized I had to start with value because, here's one of the best examples I could think of. There's this man named Viktor Frankl. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. That book, about half of the book is him describing pretty literally of his experience being in Poland, Germany, Nazi Germany, basically, and getting put into concentration camps and having to live there, and his whole family dying, most of them in the ovens, right? Mm-hmm. And him surviving this horrific thing. But he was a person who was a psychologist, he was a therapist, and he was a writer. And so what he did with that experience of being in the concentrations and watching all this death around him and losing all his loved ones is he tried to make the best of the situation, and he tried to learn about psychology, his own psychology, the people around him. And the second half of the book is him describing his logotherapy, what he created out of that, a way to help people, this therapy, method of therapy. And it's all based on this. The major concept is that the deepest desire in all human beings is to have meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And, right. You know, there's other psychologists that have a sort of a different lean on that. But I agree heavily with Viktor Frankl's conclusion that that is the deepest desire in a human being. And a lot of our need to be part of a community, to be part of a tribe, a group, all the survival instinct things are part of it. But really deep down, it's the need to be doing something of value, to be of worth, and to understand why you're here. Right.
That's so true. You said it perfectly, too. And I'm excited. We have Leslie Powers
yeah,
here.
Leslie's up. In
I'm
the
so
house.
I'm really excited. Like I was saying, guys, at the beginning, I've definitely played the couple interviews that I've done on my YouTube channel and Rumble channel with Leslie. I've played them for you guys. You guys loved them. But it's nothing like getting the person here live. And in person, I call it in person, but hey, live anyways. So welcome, Leslie Powers. I'm so excited to have you here, as you can tell. And
hi, Rick. Hi,
hello.
Chris.
Hello.
Hey,
really
how you doing?
Happy to be here too.
I know you're busy, so I appreciate this so much. I know your time is so valuable, and your Chris's, everybody listening, their time. And I can't express how much I appreciate both of you here and everyone that's listening, because it does take time of your day, and that is value to me. As we're speaking about value, Leslie, not sure if you were listening in, but Chris and I were diving into the first topic of value, and
yes.
That word, what does it even mean? What does it mean to you? And it's such a small word, but there's so much behind that word, and Chris was kind of summing it up perfect about how maybe that is what most people are striving for, is to have some type of value. So do you want to, I would love to hear your thoughts, and we can build off of what you have to say about it.
Sure. Yeah. When I think of value, I, you know, comes the question, you know, what do we value? And when we value something, we put energy into it,
mm-hmm.
right? So it becomes a purposeful thing. You know, it's something that carries meaning and gives us purpose to do things of value and to put our energy and our action into that thing. And so I think it's good for people to reflect on where they put their energy in the day-to-day life, in the course of their actions. Where are they putting their energy, their time, their attention? Because these are the ways that we show that we value something, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I work, I'm a psychotherapist, I'm a clinical social worker, and I, you know, I've worked with hundreds of people. And many, many, many people really struggle with the idea of meaning in their lives, and they also don't see a lot of value in themselves in some ways. And even people who do and can tell you that they value themselves have parts of themselves that don't feel valuable or important or worthy. And I see it as somewhat of an epidemic, really, right, that, you know, many, many of us have had experiences in our early life that have led to scripts in our unconscious, sometimes consciously we're aware, but often we're not so aware, of feeling unvaluable and feeling unworthy. And there's huge consequences to this that we don't always understand, we don't connect. And so, as you know, Chris and I, we are here today, right, because we value this work of, we value freedom, we value the truth, we value humanity, the potential of life and human beings. And so putting our time into this is showing that value. And I ask myself, you know, why aren't more people putting the time in, showing the value to stand up for themselves, to speak out around truth and freedom? And I wonder if the answer to that has to do with the lack of true value that people have for themselves. You know, Mark Passio calls it like the self-loathing. And I think that it's a bigger issue than we realize.
I totally agree, Leslie, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's one of the points that I actually wrote down, and you're nailing it perfect. And what I have written down is that you have to realize that you do have value. That, and as you were saying, a lot of people struggle with even thinking, you know, wondering if they have any value, and we can get into that. But what I have written down also is that, you know, you have to first realize that you do have value, something to offer, but that is achieved, and it always seems to come back to this, is by doing the work on yourself before. You have to do that work, and then once you start working on yourself, you'll start to realize that you do have value. And so it's really, you have to find the value in yourself before you can project it forward.
Sure, that's so true. Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, we're not taught how to do this. We're not taught about the inner workings of our psychology, of our mind, and we basically get herded through certain, you know, pathways in life that, you know, we're supposed to do. And let's say, like in school, the school system, where our value is often defined by our grades, for example, mm-hmm. or how well we behave in the classroom. And so what happens to the self-esteem or the sense of value of those kids that didn't do well in school?
Right. Very, very, very true. And Chris, you were kind of touching on this as well, because we're talking, Leslie brought up school, and this is a beef I actually pick a lot with the schooling system for many ways. But you kind of brought even further than that, the value. Like I said, this is a fascinating word and topic to me. But the value of being allowed to be a child, if we want to bring it way back, let's go right to the start. You know, the value of just being allowed to be a child, which I think is we in today's society, that children are losing that. Just to be allowed to be a kid, like, you know, talk on this, buddy. I know you.
That's a pretty important part of this huge thing. But I actually kind of want to take, you know, even one step earlier.
For sure.
It's kind of nice in the beginning to start with a little bit of grammar.
Perfect.
And, you know, I like looking up words and their etymology. So I looked up value, you know, on my favorite site for looking up that type of thing. That etymonline.com, and it comes from Latin valere, which is be strong, be well, be of value, be worth. And you know, like on the first kind of surface, we have a price equal to the intrinsic worth of a thing. So, you know, here when we're talking about value, it's kind of more like talking about a thing, right? The degree to which something is useful or estimable. And I kind of got stuck on that word estimable, and I was thinking a little bit about that. And I was thinking a little bit about how, in terms of things, often value depends on the context. You know, a value might change depending on, let's say, the quality of a thing. You know, if you were buying a product, let's say, you know, the value would change depending on how old it was. If it was something that gets old and is not as good when it gets old, for instance. Now, when we're talking about humans, you know, value takes on a whole other meaning, right? Because, you know, like, we don't like to think of people like a product. But the truth is, there are so many aspects of our culture that do just that. And it's hard to recognize them when you're immersed in them and grow up in them. You know, it's like noticing for the first time, like Leslie and I talked about, that you're inside a fish tank. And, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know you're in a fish tank if you're in a fish tank. You've just always been in a fish tank, right? So, you know, recognizing that we have this amazing thing of value, I think is something that most people have yet to do in a lot of ways, because their whole life, their school system and the systems of indoctrination that we have, and we'll get into more detail how this works, have smashed the imagination out of them. And that's where it gets back to the child. Mm-hmm. And that's where this stuff starts. From the time you're born, you're traumatized in so many ways in our culture. There's a lot of weird, wicked, satanic aspects of our culture that we don't recognize because we're all used to them. Everybody thinks they're normal. But when you really take a step back and look at the situation, you realize how people start getting devalued from birth. In all these systems of indoctrination through religion, through the authority of statism, through the modern medical system, and through the schooling system and the education system, it's the imagination and the spirit is smashed out of people into where they don't understand that they have an immense great value and that they are a gift of the universe. You're the most modern, amazing technology that God and the universe has created, and you have a job to do. You have meaning and purpose. And most people have barely come to grasp that concept. And once someone does, you can't help but doing the self-work. That's what the rest of the life becomes, is that's the self-work. True. But what is the inspiration to do that self-work if you don't think you're really worth anything? And that just, you know, a bomb might blow us up at any moment. And you're just another Joe out of a billion on this big giant ball spinning through the universe. And your life's going to be gone in a minute. And it's not going to matter anyway. And there's nothing is nothing. You know, and if you don't even believe in God, why do you even have to do self-work? You know, that's the problem, you know.
That's a great point. What do you think, Leslie?
Well, I want to just point out that value is both a noun and a verb, right? We have value and an adverb too, I guess, and we're valuable. And then what do we value? You know, I value freedom. I value truth. I value love, right? I value children. And what you brought up about the value of childhood, I think is really, really important, because it's about valuing the innocent, valuing the child itself, valuing the qualities of a child, the experience of a child, the way a child learns. And I would venture to say that our country, our culture, our society really doesn't show a lot of value around its children.
So true.
And I don't think it really values natural childhood, normal childhood experiences. You know, you can look at it, again, kind of looking at the school system. I work with some preschool teachers and kindergarten teachers, and pretty much the school system is not supporting, not valuing play or the social emotional experiences of the children. They're not cultivating social activities and recreation and you know, natural learning. They're basically really trying to make children bypass those natural aspects of development to do academics and to sit at tables and learn their ABCs. And then what does that demonstrate? It demonstrates a value for academic, intellectual, like memorization and getting a degree out of high school and then, you know, going on to college, to go on to a job or a profession. Like, you know, most kids, what do they grow up thinking is important? Well, it's important that I go to school every day. It's important that I follow directions. It's important that I do what I'm told, that I get good grades, that I think about getting a good job, that I, you know, all these messages that many well-intentioned parents and teachers give children is nothing about valuing them as human beings. Yes. Or their individuality or their creativity or their potential to be whatever, like, God created them to be or what they're on this universe to become. You know, only inside the child is that answer.
That's
right. Is that valued? You know, how much are we really valuing children? And being the value of childhood is around play. Like Chris said, imagination is the soil of which humans, you know, grow into themselves and learn about the world is through play. It's how in play in therapy, mental health therapy for children, the modality is play. Okay.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
I honestly think in the future, I like to imagine, you know, and I do entertain sometimes. I like to work from the end of the maze backwards. I like to think about the world I would like to live in, you know, that I'm working towards. And I would imagine in a more free society, there would be absolutely no reason to smash children into classrooms. Like up to the ages of 6, 7, 8, 9, like kids need to be free outdoors and with each other. And I think they can learn so much more in that way. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be opportunities for them to learn book studies if they want to, but I think we're destroying children's imagination, childhood, with all this ridiculous schooling, the way it's set up right now, especially forcing everybody to get in lines, forcing everybody to like have this Pavlovian response to like bells and these specific times, and the whole authority structure is skewed. You know, it's not a proper way to show a child their independence, where you have to like worry and ask for a pass to go to the bathroom and worry about getting a demerit or a detention. It's all punishment based. It's all based on like these scientific tests they did of torturous things they did to animals. I'm sure Leslie studied a lot of this in psychology, where, you know, they've done these sick tests in the past, and then people write books about them, like, oh, this is how we control humans' experience, and this is how we should teach our children. And actually, the methods that we're using have been passed down from the same people who trained the Nazis, and it's the same type of educational structure to create the perfect citizen. It's so to teach you to follow orders, to fall in line. Why do we even make kids get in line? You know, if you're actually trying to communicate with a group of children, you're much better off doing that in a circle setting. I've tried it. It works much better, and they have a lot more fun. And people can learn when they're having fun. And what I discovered when I had the opportunity to work with kids and groups is that if you create a fun environment, everyone really learns and they enjoy learning, and you learn too, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And I got me kind of thinking two ways right here by what you both said. And that is, when I think of what the system values, and you guys are breaking the school system down perfect, and I totally agree that it's such an unnatural way to learn. It was for me. It didn't work. Like I don't learn that way. I don't. And I know a lot of other kids that didn't either. And so I think it really, what we're describing really shows what the system values is compliant slaves that just basically do what they're told. And then Chris brought up a great point where you got the bell system and line up and all of this thing. They start that at such a young age. And then the other direction I'm thinking too is what Leslie was saying, and same with you, Chris, is the value of play and how much that was so important. And I keep telling people I was very blessed growing up. I really was. I had a stay-at-home mother who was home every day, taking me places, taking me out in nature, showing me frogs and snakes and taking me fishing and climbing trees. I drove her crazy. But we grew so much, and I started to learn my value back then. And it's not to say I didn't have a lot. Society's so impactful with the programming that they barrage on you at such a young age. You know, I think all of us fall off the path or are very susceptible to that at one time or another. That's where the self-work comes in. But I just know that the value, it was so valuable. And I like what you said, Leslie. I think that more people need to look at children and learn from them. I know I learned so much from watching, getting a child's perspective and just how they, their mind works. It's fascinating and how they look at things. And a lot of, a lot of people are like, oh, you just, kids are there. You don't hear them. You don't see them. Kind of the adults are talking. You bring great points up. Yeah. Both of you.
I think that if you let kids sort of follow their natural impetus, you know, and that if certain conditions are met, so if children are loved and they're made to feel safe and secure, and they are given the adequate freedom and protection, right, and in the healthy environment, if you allow children to naturally explore and be in nature, they're going to learn very naturally. And there's an impetus. I call it like life wants to live, you know, and it's in children. And if you don't impede it and you don't squash it, there's that child is going to be propelled to experience life and learn in the world. And I'm a strong, you know, believer that we each have our own sort of unique, I guess, template or seed of self, you know, that if properly watered and nurtured will develop into its unique flower, you know, its unique gift. And as adults, you know, if we really value life itself and value nature and the processes, the natural processes of nature, we can start to allow children and other people in our lives to unfold into themselves. And I think that's the greatest gift that we can offer others, is to sort of unconditionally honor and accept the potential, the unique potential of each person. There's a movie that I just saw that I recommend called Radical, and it does illustrate some of the points that we're talking about, and it's based actually on a true story, which is extra cool. And it's set in Matamoros, Mexico, in this very impoverished, drug-stricken, you know, drug-dealing community, where the children are really just sort of walking through filth and violence every day, you know, to go to school. And it demonstrated what a difference one adult can make in children's lives, who approach them with respect and as humans, and seeing their potential and just creating the environment that promotes their growth versus the environment that is more typical in these school settings that blocks and suppresses and oppresses a child's spirit. And you could see in the movie the hopelessness of the community and the mental blocks that the parents have about, like, telling their kids, don't even dream. Don't even have that fantasy. It's impossible. You'll just be disappointed. This is your lot, right? All of these mental scripts and self-talk that will develop in ourselves we all have some limiting self-talk, some beliefs about ourselves that limit us.
Yep.
And sometimes we're not conscious of them. They can be subtle. But there are ways to look within and notice how we've been programmed to hold ourselves back, to diminish our value, our worth. We say our self-esteem, right? Our self-concept is very much influenced from these early childhood experiences where the adults and the communities are clearly not really valuing childhood, children, and the environments that kids are in. And, you know, just look at how much child abuse there is in the world, how much sexual abuse, how many children are trafficked, how many kids are alone at home, you know. And I think we'll see, like, we are not in a society that is child-centered or child-focused. Right. We're not valuing children. And then what do you think will happen to a society when these when children grow up, children who don't feel important or powerful?
We're seeing it. Yeah. We're starting to see it. I agree. And it's, God, you guys make such great points. And I think this is such an important conversation and topic. And I'm just really so interested in hearing what you have to say, because I think about this so much. And you're right, Leslie, because, you know, if you're raised from the time that you're born to just, you know, like you were saying with that movie, which I am going to watch, the movie Radical. I have it written in my notes here to watch it tonight. So I'm going to check that out, guys. And hopefully everyone listening will, too.
It's at the theater.
OK, perfect. Then I'll go check it out. All right. So at the theater, I got to write that down. I would have been looking all night, Leslie. But okay, so it's at the theater. Perfect, guys, so please check it out. But you make great points that if you're living in those conditions and from the time you can remember, you're just told that, you know, this is as good as it gets, this is your lot in life, that you, this is how it is for you for the rest of your life, and then no wonder children are growing up with no value, no sense of value or self-worth or even hope or dreams. I mean, you make a great point. And I mean, how many times do kids probably hear that and feel that, you know, that this is, it's never going to get any better. So of course, what is that child going to grow into?
Well, and the dreams and hopes are about what we've told them is important, which is material, comfort, mm-hmm. wealth, you know, through money, right? Houses, security, yeah. It's pleasure.
That's a big one. Yeah. And yeah, all great points. That's what, yeah, and it's kind of cool because I'm just checking my notes too, and what we're talking about, as soon as you start talking about growth, I'm like, well, that actually falls right in line with my notes, because I have in my notes written about self-growth and then the difference between, you know, positive self-growth and then forced growth. So maybe we could dive into that a little, because we kind of are, because I'm looking at, Chris kind of brought that up, you know, like if you, and you did too, Leslie, that if you allow children to be children and, you know, go and explore nature and get out in the world and be around other children and adults and learn these valuable skills that are going to serve them well their whole life if they're allowed to explore it and learn from it. I think that's such a positive, you know, it's not forced and it's natural and it's voluntary. And I think that that's where real growth happens. But then you see so much of what we're talking about is forced growth. You know, when you people in their conditions and the school system, and I think of even jobs and relationships, how much of that is forced? It's such a big topic.
Rick, I think it's like, you know, people describe it as an onion, you know, where these mm-hmm. topics are many layered. And what we started doing is to address the problem, right? There's this big problem with people not recognizing their value and being undervalued as individuals. And then, so we're kind of looking at the layers of why is that? And when you go to the young childhood, one of the things that we're, you know, we started peeling back there was educational system, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of other layers. Okay. And then, you know, one of those layers is educational system. Another one is our economic system, our transportation system, our political statism system. And these are all things that devalue the individual. You know, I remember hearing somebody talk about the psychology of just knowing and hearing about nuclear bombs being dropped on the planet, you know, and the story about these nuclear atomic bombs, you know, being created and dropped. And now that these countries have this type of power that could basically destroy the whole planet, it devalues each individual to consider that and to know that, you know, that, oh my gosh, my life could end just like that, right? And then when you finish school and you get out of that indoctrination system that's teaching you to listen to authority and do what you're told, and that's what's valuable, then you become sort of like, what are the jobs that are available for a modern, you know, young person who's 18 or 19 or 20 years old, you know, unless you're like really on top of your class, you know, most of the mid-level jobs out there aren't the type of jobs that really make you feel super valuable, you know, unless you have your really inner strength, your inner fire and a real good family and other things going on that you love in life. It's really hard to be like, you know, in love with working at a restaurant, you know, even a family restaurant. I could see being in love with that. That's something, you know, at least you and your family are working together on something. But, you know, you just think of so many of the jobs, you know, like that people have working at just some store, or some corporate building. Something you don't really belong to, something that you kind of go to because you need to get the funds to pay the bills, right? And so, you know, a huge percentage of our population becomes these sort of peons, you know, which just like the caste system that we see in India or that we've seen in other times in history where people are kind of sorted into these different areas of society. What creates that? You know, our government system, our belief in the system of authority. Right. It devalues individual choice from the very get go. It's saying that when you leave the school, for instance, I remember as a young child deciding I was frustrated with the way they were treating me one day and I decided to walk home. You know, in the eyes of our silly world out there, some goon has the right, who doesn't know me or my parents, has the right to come like grab me, you know, and take me somewhere. And, you know, give me a hard time about it where, you know, like that's 100% my decision, you know, and no one has any right to enforce their. Is that really what we want to teach children, that, you know, the best way to learn is to whip somebody with it, you know, to beat them up with it, you know, to force it down their throat, like force feeding a villain, like treating our children like terrorists from day one. And then it just gets worse year after year. And then when you leave school, it's even worse, you know? Now you lose whatever support you had in school.
That's a good point.
Things continue.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I really want to ask the question to everybody listening, like, has anyone ever really forced you to grow? Does growth, personal self-growth, come from force? I would venture to say no. I think that force and coercion, like, creates defenses that block growth. You might get compliance. You might have a superficial appearance of someone learning something or doing something, but is it really growth? I think that you hit the nail on the head, Rick, when you said that doing something voluntarily really allows growth.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a psychological like concept that is true within ourselves, that when we are thwarted from our voluntary participation in something, that something in us kind of dies or goes dormant. That is a really important part of who we are. And it's a very sad reality that I think, you know, many of us have been going through the motions of life, doing what we're told, what we're supposed to do, but not feeling satisfied, not feeling fulfilled, and not feeling valued. And not ever getting there, right? Like, you can do all the right things. How many of us have done all the so-called right things and still end up kind of missing the mark, or it just feels like we don't have enough, we're not making enough, we're not doing well enough. We get stuck in this the hamster wheel, right? Where we get fed stories about, you know, America is the land of the free, and, you know, if anybody could make it here, right? That's like, yep, this,
that's what they lore, say.
The mythos of this, you know, the myth of the United States is like, people come here from everywhere else to make it, you know? And if you can't make it here, then what's wrong with you? You must not be trying hard enough. You got to pick yourself up by the bootstraps, you know? And it's like, there's some built-in catch-22s.
That's so, you're so right too, Leslie. I've been thinking about that, because you are, that is what they sell to people, is that you can do anything, you know, you can be anything that you want. And if you don't get to where you want, then it's something, they turn it something wrong with you. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole, everything's rigged kind of against you. It's something, mm-hmm. It has to be something wrong with you. It's you messed up. And that's just such a, it's
there's
such
a lot of sense. Like, wow. There's a lot of like social pressure that's mm-hmm. built into a lot of the television programs that people get used to watching.
For sure.
And, you know, they're just familiar with kind of a lot of people looking at the same mass media images and graphics showing these kind of pictures of, you know, what normal people look like, you know, and that sort of window of what, where we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to act is largely becomes default mode, where people are just sort of like, your survival, so I was talking about, your survival instinct is kind of like, mm-hmm. the part of you that knows you need to fit in with the tribe, because if you're out there all by yourself, you know, you're going to get killed, you know, yeah. by the animals. That's ancient, ancestral, instinctual part of us,
yeah,
that wants
yeah.
to belong and wants to fit in and doesn't want to seem like the odd duck out. But, I mean, the trouble is that fitting in this society actually means you're joining the Borg. You're joining the collective. You're joining with collectivist thinking, which mm-hmm. preys on individuality, and it preys on the ability to choose a thing. And that's our greatest value that we have. We have choices, right? We have this body where we can move it, and this brain where we can think it. Even if someone binds our body up, we can still do amazing things with our mind and our voice. What Viktor Frankl's quote I always loved so much, he's, you know, the one that was there in the concentration camps, and he observed people dying, you know, often. And he said, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And so that's the more so ways true. You look at which our society has found all these ingenious, tricky ways of taking away that one thing in lots of little ways,
yeah.
the more people have lost their sense of value, because they're not able to fully drive this car that they've been given. Like I said, this modern version of technology that the universe has created is your body, the most updated version it has. And here you are in the forefront of reality, you know. And God's
well,
universe.
Look how social media, though, Chris, is steering. I understand technology and its value. I see the value, but then I see the negative side to it, too. And you brought this up just a few minutes ago, that you people are kind of looking at what's going on in reality shows, and which, you know, and they start to compare that to real life. And maybe that's the standard they should be striving for, which is crazy to me, because you look at these reality shows, there's nothing real about them. Mm-hmm. There's nothing real. Like, so many people look at this and like, oh, that's how a relationship should be. This is how my friendship should be. This is how my job should be. And you're looking at these reality shows, and there's nothing real about them. So you're already set up to fail trying to set this bar that's not real.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. It's all based like on like Disney ideals and Barbie ideals.
It's a lie. It's a lie.
So this whole conglomeration of pressures on us can really lead to, I guess, breaking our spirit in a sense, mm-hmm. which is, I think, of greatest value within us, right? It's that which connects us to God, to all that is, to life itself, spirit. And even though there are all of these forces working against us, it is still us, it is I, it is you who needs to make the choice to break out of the trap. And it starts with the mind, with our mental aspects, right? And within us all who have been kind of, you know, outcasted or told we're wrong or suppressed and oppressed, there's a spirit inside that is upset. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably anger. And that anger is a powerful and important source of energy that can help us break free from this trap. And it can lead to a desire to defend ourselves. Now, unfortunately, our world really doesn't teach a lot of emotional skills of emotional intelligence or emotional awareness, and anger and conflict is one of those taboo things that people are afraid of. Mm-hmm. So much of our behavior is geared towards avoiding conflict, avoiding expressing anger. You know, many of us have been raised with people who are exposed to people who didn't manage their anger well, and that anger could very well have been a source of pain and suffering and trauma. And so we have all these mixed up impulses inside us without really knowing what to do with it. But I think it is this, when a person who is in a state of depression, which is defined really by feeling hopeless and helpless. And some people will even say that depression is when anger is turned inward and someone becomes self-loathing, self-blaming, self-hating. It's a very low vibration. It leads one to passivity, to being stuck, right? When I see someone's depression start to transform into anger, then I'm seeing progress, because that anger is about recognition of being held down, of it's a recognition of our value, of our spirit, that says, no, we should not be treated this way. And that is, it's a tricky energy, but it's really important to find peace and work with this energy of anger and understanding how that can lead to defending oneself and protecting oneself and breaking out of status quo into something new. But I think a lot of people are scared of it because they don't know what to do with it, because especially when it comes out really big.
And which so makes sense if it's suppressed all these years. Of course, when it does blow, it's going to be epic because you don't understand it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of need for people to understand their emotional landscape and gather the skills to navigate their emotions and communicate. And, you know, we'll get into this as the next part about how, right? But I think this part of like really going inward and really looking at the areas of one's life that we don't like to look at, you know, the traumas, the way we've been traumatized. And I'll add here that a lot of, when we talk about society and culture, a lot of what's been normalized in how we treat children actually is creating traumatized children. So for example, you know, my parents had families that basically felt that kids are to be seen and not heard.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Or there's been times when children are just supposed to, you know, cry it out as if they're going to figure out how to soothe themselves on their own, you know.
Yeah, that's a big one. Let them cry it out.
And the truth is that's just reflects an ignorance about child development and about how, and the process of secure attachment. Yeah.
Wow. This is such a great topic, Leslie and Chris. I think we're really starting, like Chris said, to peel back the layers of this onion, man. It just, it really, you start to see how deep this really goes and how deep this the programming of society is against people. And I, and you bring up a great point with the anger. That's something that, you know, that's really taught, is that anger is a bad thing, that that emotion is something not to even explore. It's a, it's a negative, and that's so untrue. There, we have it for a reason. I've always said that you have all of these emotions, whether you pick an emotion, whether it's anger, happiness and joy, or sadness and crying, there's a place. And we have these emotions for a reason. They serve a purpose. So when you start restricting them is when I think it really starts to express itself in so many different negative ways on the individual, which we can definitely get into right after the break. We're, I can't believe the first hour is almost up, guys. And, you know, I mean, you could talk about this for hours and hours because it's huge. You know, what do you think, Chris? We got about...
You know,
1 minute.
I was thinking about feelings. Like, I think feelings are like signposts. You know, they're like, when you see a feeling, you know, it, it's something that's made to get your attention. And then you're, what you're, what you do, if you're a wholesome person, you know, is you follow that, that signpost down to its root, and you see what is it connected to? Where does it come from? That's what the feelings are for. Them by themselves, as soon as you've done that, you know, they come and go. You don't want to hang on to them. You don't want to let them control you. You just want to see them for what they are, because they lead you to important things that you need to discover. That's what they're here for. They're indicators.
Yeah.
People often want to hang on to them and make them be the thing itself. You know, I am the feeling. You know, I start identifying with the feeling, but the feeling's an indicator. It's not a thing of itself.
That's a great point, Chris. Wow.
Yeah, and ignoring.
I've got a lot more to say about self-defense, but I'm going to save that for hour two.
Yeah, and the interconnectedness of our feelings, of our within ourselves, the relationship that we have with all of our feelings and our parts, and then how this relates to how we are in relationship with others, the interconnectedness. And if we are not emotionally healthy, that has an impact on all the people around us.
It has
a consequence.
Yeah, it definitely ripples out. It's a, definitely a ripple effect and an echo. I find that you bring great points. Wow, guys, I'm, like I said, guys, please stick around for hour two. I'm so excited to do this show. I've been looking forward to this for weeks and weeks, guys. I really have. And so please stick around. We are here with Chris Jansen, End Evil Podcast. We also have Leslie Powers, Alive, Thrive. Please, guys, stick around back 4 or 5 minutes, and we'll be back for hour two. So please stick around, guys.
Junkie, I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener-supported radio, the printing press for freedom, at a time when freedom is needed the most.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, for the Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of 6 hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal Lotus O deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-voloid slots of the stator, every 7th conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the Crypt Ricks. I've been thinking, and what have I been thinking about? Why have we talked about it? Value, the word value, its meaning, and then also self and forced growth and self-growth, all these things about growth. That's what I've been thinking about. We got into it in the first hour, and I want to welcome back my amazing guests. We got Chris Jansen and Evil Podcast and Leslie Powers here live. I'm so happy, and that is alive and thrive. And I know you guys, we got another couple little bullet points that I brought up for this show in the first hour, Chris and Leslie, and I know you guys have some things that you want to explore and dive into. So Chris, where do you want to start with this? And then we'll go and hit all the points that you want to cover.
Rick, I was thinking a lot about self-defense.
Very important.
You know, like if we were to teach something in school, you know, of importance, I mean, how much earlier would we begin trying to encourage the importance of defending yourself? And the fact that we don't, and that isn't part of school, and that isn't part of the program, is like really backwards when you think about it, because, you know, understanding the value and what I was talking about when I was talking about us being technology, what I meant was nature's technology. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nature's learning all the time, and we're the newest thing. You know, it's a really amazing what we are. Our body's limitless. As far as we know, there has never been an Olympics where records were not beaten. You know what I mean? There's no point at which we've said, oh, nope, that's the end of human potential and that's what we can do. No, it's limitless. And yet folks, for the most case, are very limited. We see some like really cool cases where people push themselves to extremes. I'm just in love with Wim Hof. You know, every time people have me in an interview, I always talk about Wim Hof a little bit. He's just one example that we can do a lot more with our body. And I think it's a proof. It's evidence that people are not valuing their own self, because if they did value their self, they would put a lot more time and energy into defending it and defending their right to own it and control it of their own accord. And so I think if we want to create a different world, a different society, and if we each individually want to change, we have to definitely work on self-defense. We have to practice it and make it part of our life. And if we don't, then how can we ever take responsibility for, you know, being an active human being out in this world? And that doesn't mean that people that aren't, not everyone's the same. You know, we got young children, we got infants, we got elderly. People are of all levels of strength and ability, and there's compensations for each ability. We live in a world with weapons, you know, and I don't care if you're the most amazing martial artist in the world. You never forget that scene in Indiana Jones when the guy comes at running at him with two machetes, swinging him around, and he just shoots him, you know, and kind of barely even looks. You know, a 5-year-old with a gun, you know, can take out, you know, the most amazing martial artist. So in the right conditions, of course. But the point being that there are means and methods at all of our hands and fingertips to study and learn how to defend ourselves, how to really, if you have something that's amazing in value, do you just leave it, you know, out in the open where it could easily be destroyed or hurt or touched? You know, like if you spent your whole fortune on the fanciest car you could and you've wanted it your whole life, would you just park it out in East Oakland and don't lock the doors and leave it there for 3 months? No, you know. Things that are valuable, we take care of, and we learn how to protect and defend.
Yeah, good point. I think it's very natural. You know, it's an instinct, really, even going back to our animal nature. The animal aspect is defense is a natural instinct. That is, I think there are efforts to take it out of our human impulse, right? You look at kids in school. I know my son, if he got into a fight, even if he was acting in self-defense, he got in trouble, right? That's very common in schools, that you're discouraged from defending yourself, either in through your body, with your body, or your voice. Mm-hmm. So our voice is also a way for us to defend ourselves. It is, we can say no, we can yell, we can, you know, say, I don't like that. And that type of assertive communication is also not really taught to children very, very reliably.
Right.
And I think that when we're talking about self-defense, we're acknowledging that no individual exists in a vacuum, in isolation. And in fact, isolation of a human is very damaging. It's not a place where people will thrive. It's also can be, though, in an unsafe feeling world where people go to retreat. And that's a common thing too, where people are getting pretty beat up in the world and then isolating themselves and afraid to almost leave their house because of the sense of threat in the world and not feeling equipped or valuable or important or have the skills or knowledge to know what to do about that. And I wanted to share that, you know, first of all, a human wouldn't exist. It's obvious, right? If we didn't have other humans, because the birth process of a human comes from a male and a female in a creative process that creates an infant, a baby. And how, if a child is treated with love and empathy, right, and attunement, then that child develops a security, which naturally will include a sense of value that they will, you know, want to protect. And because also they'll be protected by the adults in their life. So it becomes a very natural state for a well-adjusted, you know, individual. And so this development of empathy is part of our physiology. There's something called the mirror neurons that have been discovered that allow us to kind of feel, to resonate with the vibration of another person's emotion, you know, and the eyes are very important in this process of developing connection and attunement and touch, right? And how people touch each other and the respecting of the boundaries of other, of our bodies, right? And the understanding of consent. And that if you value yourself, you will naturally value and respect the value of another individual. And through that experience of shared empathy, there's a sense of, I don't want to hurt you because I know what that feels like. And I don't want you to suffer.
Right. So that makes a lot of sense, Leslie, when you break it down like that, like it. You broke down so many amazing things that I'm just thinking of so many different things, like this connection that we've lost that they're breaking. Like you were saying, the value of, you know, this empathy, you're learning it through all these different, cues, for lack of a better word, through the eyes and how it's spoken and your face expressions and through touching and all of these things, which they are doing their best, in my opinion, to sever. Between people, you know, you see people, like you said, really starting to live in that fear state. They're isolating first in their house, and I think then it starts to, you know, they isolate in themselves. So we got this building upon each other. But you make such great points, because it really is so valuable to realize that you know, to when you start to realize these. What we're talking about, that you don't want to do it to other people. Mm-hmm. Like when you experience it yourself, that's so important. If you don't experience it, how are you not, you don't even know not to do it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that empathy thing, you know,
it's huge.
Way earlier in the conversation when we were talking about, you know, childhood and the imagination, I think, like, if you look at two animals play, for instance, like look at two kittens playing or two tigers for that matter. And they're going through exactly that process in their own way as the children play, as they paw at each other, you know, they each get the feeling of what it feels like to be hit with the other one. And when one pushes a little too hard for playtime, the other one lets them know, like the claws coming out, basically. It's like, oh, you want to play like that? And then the other one's like, oh, that's what it feels like when you
don't want
to
do that.
And but it's a very beautiful process to watch with children and little boys and little girls playing, wrestling, and, you know, testing those boundaries, you know. And so, you know, some of the evil tests that have been done in history that I've talked about, when they take children away from other children, and like Leslie was pointing out, you know, when children aren't around their parents and they don't get love, they lack that time to learn those things. So that's what creates the psychopathy, you know, the psychopaths, and that part of people that can just not feel empathy, and the importance of, you know, communicating with others and, you know, learning to care what they feel and think too.
You know, in addition to kids playing with kids, what's also important are the, you know, the parent playing with the child. And, you know, imagine the father wrestling with his son. And that's a teaching experience. That is a trust building experience. That is ultimately an opportunity for someone who has greater power and weight and physical strength to hurt potentially a child, right? So if a child's parent is abusing that power, then that will have a result around that child's trust of people and trust of, and it'll impact their view of themselves and their own sense of value as well. So, you know, there's a lot to it. We are individuals in relationship, and we are individuals that are interconnected, whether we like it or not. And this interconnection really is, you know, vital, really, for our survival as a species. And for us to value ourselves and then naturally, hopefully, value others, we recognize the value of all people. Individuality is important. It is what creates all the colors of the universe and our diversity and our unique expression. And yet, we are also interconnected, and so we need to learn how to value relationships and understand that cause and effect that comes from our behavior, how it impacts another, and vice versa.
Right, and that's because I do think about that, Leslie. Like I think back to my childhood. That's kind of like my anchor, and I think back to all the time that I spent with my mom and my dad, and this the bonding time was so important. And the thing I learned things that were so like that I still bring with me now, all these things that I learned. And it was like Chris was saying, testing these boundaries. And it was so important that I went through that. And you need to go through that, I think, to really start to grow in a healthy way. And we see them just disconnect. Like you just see this destruction that they're isolating people. And Chris brought it up earlier. I think it was Chris that brought it up that, you know, we're very social. At least I know I am. I need that, not all the time, but there's a time and place, and that interaction and we're getting along in society and all of these things that go along with it is very important. And you see them trying to isolate people and put them in groups. And, you know,
I was just thinking that, Rick, you know, I was on the tip of my tongue to start bringing up, you know, like we saw when this COVID pandemic, scandemic split wide open, what was, you know, I kept asking myself, what is the psychology of what's happening here?
Right.
You know, I mean, millions and millions of people were told, you're not that valuable, go home. You know, only the most valuable people can keep working now because we got this whole, you know, scandemic going, you know. And so a lot of people were sitting at home and, you know, the alcohol rates went way up. They were, you know, weren't that worried about people's health, you know, with all the rules they
That's
made.
True.
There was never rules about don't drink too much, you know, go ahead, drink all you want. A lot of people were sitting at home thinking, damn, you know, I'm not all that valuable right now, you know, because most people spend 50% of their time going to a job, a J-O-B, right? Mm-hmm. And so if that J-O-B isn't like all of a sudden the whole world's basically telling you you're not that valuable, you know, if we're all sick, then we'd rather you just stay home, you know, but some of us are, you know, what's the psychological impact? It's like I was saying with the atomic bomb psychological, there's a lot of aspects of our time in history that we're in right now and in our culture and the way everybody thinks that devalue individual choice and the amazing opportunity that we each have as individuals to do just about anything and think of anything amazing in history that's happened. There's usually some pretty amazing, exceptional people who use their willpower and their energy to do that amazing thing that had never been done before. So the potential's there. And the technology of nature that I'm talking about, God's technology, is us. And that's there. The only thing that's lacking to connect the two is the willpower and the knowledge that you are that valuable thing, that nothing really does own you.
Yeah. 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 And I think, you know, part of what I'm wanting to talk about is this ecology, right? The word ecology, which is a biological term, it's that references the relationships of organisms to one another and to their physical surroundings, you know, to their physical environment. So we have an ecology going on, and we can look at the health of that ecology. We can look within ourselves, and we have a personal ecology. We have, what is our relationship to ourself? You know, and how do you talk to yourself? Are you kind? Are you compassionate? Are you critical? Are you, you know, are you in conflict within? Are you balanced within yourself? So there's that level of healthy, building a healthy ecology. And then there's the ecology about how do we interact within a family unit? And then from there to the larger local community, to the world community, right? We have, and even people who claim to be antisocial or unsocial and introverts, still, they're on their phones. That's true.
Yeah.
They're seeking interaction, you know, some kind of response, an acknowledgement. Why are the like buttons so popular? It's so reinforcing, right? Many people base their self-esteem on how many likes they get on a post. They're hungering for to be seen, mm-hmm. right, by the environment. And so this is, you know, used against us, this aspect of human psychology and our interconnectedness, our need for relationship at all levels, including our relationship to nature, which has really been severed, there's, you know, in many ways, and replaced with artificial entities, really, that are like trying to substitute for real human connection. So we're like little mice, like pushing the lever to get the reward, but we're getting like a fake reward. You know, like a crack, you know, yeah, or something, you know,
exactly.
And people are missing what is actually truly organically rewarding, which comes down to really love of self and the value of relationships and being connected to other people, to being valued, to being able to express yourself. Right.
Right. Well, you look at what they're targeting, like Leslie. That's kind of like what I kind of focus on sometimes is like, what are the powers to be targeting? And then you, mm-hmm. A lot of the times you see very quickly it's things that have true value. What are they attacking? What do you see them attacking? Well, they definitely attacking people's self-esteem and how they feel about themselves. And then you see them attacking the family unit, which was a huge one. You see them attacking mm-hmm. our health. These are all things of value that mm-hmm. that they're honing in on. And then I just don't want to add, because you were talking about chat and likes and stuff, which I find is probably a whole topic that we could do someday that is messed up, is that how people even, they don't care what type of a response they get. Some people thrive even on negative responses, but they still need to get that acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And some people thrive on this negative, just yeah. toxic. That's a whole...
Yeah.
Different topic.
You can see that in kids, and it's created by, you know, parenting and ways that, you know, we respond to children. Mm-hmm. What are we rewarding? Are we giving them our true attention, you know, and giving them our time? And if we don't, then kids are going to do something to get our attention.
That's
and
true.
It's usually something that's making us mad.
Yeah, that's when they act up and they're like, I'm going to get attention one way or the other.
Yeah,
and it works, and that's like trolls on the internet. To be honest, mm-hmm. people that just kind of troll the chat room. If you see quickly that if everybody ignores them, they just kind of go away. Like they just, it's not, you're not giving them what they want. So yeah. it's an interesting topic. I don't understand. I can't see me just going on the internet and causing chaos for that attention. But hey,
you know, Rick, you and I, when we do our discussions with the One Great Work Warriors, mm-hmm. and when Leslie and I have joined projects together, we generally talk about these problems. The reason we're talking about the problems is, you know, awareness is sort of like the first step, just like the alcoholic. You first got to admit there's a problem type of thing.
True.
But then, you know, we always like to try to head the direction in our conversation of, okay, what are we going to do about it? And that's partly why we're here doing what we're doing, because somewhere we already went through that process in our life and said, okay, here's the problem. And now I'm addressing it by trying to speak to others, you know, by trying to express myself publicly, because that has the best chance. We have these modern devices that can reach a lot more people than just talking to people one-on-one to make a difference in this situation, because it does, like Leslie said, we're all interconnected in this problem. You know, we can't just isolate ourselves. And if we do, it doesn't solve the bigger problem for ourselves or others. Yeah. Ultimately, it doesn't get us anywhere except alone, you know, if we would decide to be alone. But yeah. if we decide to stick with other people, there is a natural responsibility built in to that. And I would say, it's almost like seven simple steps. you know?
Okay.
And the first one is recognizing truth. And that truth is what we talked about, that we have a freedom of choice. You know, our sense of meaning matters more than anything. And that freedom is, you know, that's everything. That's what God gave us, right? Truth. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Once you get that, you got to let that soak in and look at all the facets of the ways in the world that that's not working out. You know, that's a hard process, right?
It definitely is.
At a certain point, the third step is you got to decide to care, you know, and get out of that muck. Decide.
What was step two?
Was to just let it soak in and learn, to relearn, to look, you know, you have to, once you make this realization, you have to reexamine every aspect of your life.
Yes. Self-reflection. Right?
It forces you to. It's like you broke down the whole foundation of the, you know, home. Now you got to kind of like look at everything like we were talking about. School, yeah. Your religion, your blah, 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 everything you do.
And that's scary. I get it. That's scary. It was for me. When you really start getting honest and questioning and reexamining like your belief structure, where your beliefs came from, why you have them, why you react the way you do, why you think the way you do. That's scary when you start questioning that, but it's a process that you have to go through.
Absolutely. You know, and this, each of these steps is, you know, we could do a whole episodes and episodes on each, but I'm just kind on of blazing step. Through what I see as this process, you know, like once you do that. And once you, number three, you decide you're going to care. Then number four is you got to fix yourself, you know, and that means a lot of self-work. So you got to go back in, you know, and deal with your problems and your relationships and all this stuff. And then you have to find your purpose, you know.
Very true.
Because you can't really get to that if you haven't dealt with all your problems. Mm-hmm. And then once you found your purpose, now you can express yourself in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, kind of like coming back around to who you are. And then once you've done that, you can help others do that. And that's like the kind of, to me, like, you know, the most heavenly, you're reaching the highest levels when you've gone through all that self-work and you've learned to deal with your problems and your trauma by expressing yourself. And then you go beyond that and learn how to help other people and think about the bigger picture of all people. You know what I mean? So it's a long road. From that first step of realizing, oh, this stuff is a big problem, you know? Our world's really messed up with evil.
Well, I like to ask, sorry, Leslie, go ahead.
Well, I really love that trajectory, and I would only just add, and maybe it would be under the step four, fix self, and doing the self work is also like gain skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gaining, I mean, obviously through this you're gaining knowledge, but there's also, you recognize when you look at yourself, you can start to see what you didn't learn, you know, and where you're not in alignment, and you may not know what to do. You know, how do you get those skills, you know, to be able to express your purpose and express yourself in the world? So I think as I was, you know, hearing Chris talk, it dawned on me that I think part of the gift that I think Chris and I both are like invested in doing is to help provide a safe landing spot for people to do some of this work, you know?
Yeah, I get, but I was going to add in what Chris was saying, and you kind of touched on step four that he said was the self-work. A lot of the problem I see, and I'm just trying to word it the way, the problem I see, Leslie, and maybe Chris, you can weigh on in this too, is you're dealing, a lot of people don't think they have a problem, that this is the work, is that so many people I've even talked to, they think they're doing great, like they think it's everybody else's the problem. So annoying, how do people even start to address this inner work? I mean, if they don't even think they have a problem, it's a big
thing. Back to
thing.
Step one.
You're back. Yeah, I guess you go. Yeah, keep going.
But, you know, I think people, if they're honest, there's nobody alive that says they don't have any problems. It's just their definition of what the problem is often very short-sighted or very superficial.
Okay.
So my, you know, approach is to meet people wherever they're at. And what do they see as a problem? What's a problem for them? You know, and it may be something like, you know, they can't find a girlfriend, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Right. And so wherever they're starting, if a person's willing to stick with it and ask themselves questions and follow the string to see where it leads, eventually it's going to open up a person's eyes to what's going on for real in the world, you know, and for real in themselves. And they're going to start to see the real reason that they're not satisfied, or they're not fulfilled, or they're lonely, or they're not making the money that they want, or whatever it might be. Everyone has got something.
We all, yeah, exactly.
And that's the starting place. It's right. Just, I think that people stop, they face a realization that scares them and that triggers their discomfort. And then the wall goes up, the defenses go up, and they stop there.
And I kind of have that in my notes too. I kind of had in brackets that if it's forced, the wall goes up. So it's kind of building on what you just said, Leslie, that this is a process that you have to, undertake yourself and be very loving to yourself during the process, and not be too, be honest. Like for me, I can only speak for me that how it went. Like I have to be, brutally honest with myself, but also know when to kind of dial back a little and be more compassionate towards myself. It's this dance and balance that I do. And because I find that, if you just kind of go at somebody, or they start really hammering on themselves and it's forced, then like you said, this wall goes up. Like it's too much too quick, maybe.
Yeah. And unfortunately, so, I think that if you don't do the inner work, eventually there are consequences that occur in your life that create pain. You know, if you can ignore a bad habit, you can ignore the consequences, the early signs, but eventually things catch up. And that's how, unfortunately, most people are kind of, in a sense, if you want to call it being forced to grow, is through pain and hardship. And it doesn't have to be like so extreme. You know, maybe to some degree we need to feel like, as humans, you know, if everything is going fine and great and dandy, like why change, right?
Yeah.
It's usually
something, a good point.
Right, that's going wrong, that creates us to contemplate and to reflect and to see, what's causing us pain. And that's, I think, again, true. People are looking in a very narrow lens rather than be like, we really want people to look with a broad lens, this bird's eye view, to look at the patterns around us, to open up your view.
That perspective too, I think. I did skip over something I wish I would have brought up in the first section there.
Bring it up.
And that's religion. Because what you're talking about, Leslie, is, I feel like it makes so much sense. But from the lens of someone who's still in the fish tank of a religion, sorry, folks who are in, religious, but it is a fish tank in that, if you're holding on to dogmatic thinking, if they're in their mind, like, I'm going to be punished if I don't wear this white shirt on a Sunday or whatever stories they bought into. That's what the danger of religions is, that not only is it believing in the stories you've been told in your lifetime, but you're buying into the feelings that you get from grandma and mom and dad and uncle and brother and all the other people at the churches you've been to over and over, and all the rituals you've seen of doing the same thing over and over. It becomes very ingrained. And sometimes people are like in a state of punishing themselves in their own mind because they think they're evil or bad about things, or they think they've gone against their parents' religion or their family's religion, and they're dealing with all this guilt and it's controlling their choices. I mean, you got to get past that stuff before we can get any of this other stuff. You know what I mean? That's going to hold you up real quick, right?
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. I think also that the religious programming leads us into a savior programming, which disempowers us. It sees us as not the answer, right? The answer is something external to us. It's a savior of some sort. It's the leaders, the authorities, and it leads to people. I think, you know, they stop valuing their own inner wisdom.
Yeah. And it stops them from really taking action too. Like it stops, yeah. It kind of ties into Chris's self-defense. A lot of people stop taking action. You bring up a great point, Leslie. That's a problem I have too, is that if you're looking for an external savior, which a lot of people are, and I even put the UFO community, I'll put them right in that lump. I'll lump them right in there with you, that you're going to, you know, the aliens are going to come down. They're going to fix humanity and they're going to save the world. And I lump you right in there with waiting for some godly figure to float down from heaven and fix us. You know, this to me, I've always truly believed, you know, this is humanity's mess. We've made this.
Yeah.
And we're going to be the ones that's why it's a spiritual war. We're going to fix that. We're going to be the ones that have to work our way through this. I really have a problem with this external.
It's a fantasy world.
It is. It's
our desire to be in this comforting sanctuary of comfort where we can sort of take the responsibility and put it on others and have a false sense of safety.
Right. And sorry, Chris, I didn't mean to cut you off. What did you want to add, my friend?
No, I was really just kind of honing into my own life experience of knowing people and seeing people that are dealing with a lot of layers of guilt or being, in my mind, kind of in their own mental prison because of a belief structure. And even our governmental structure is one of those religions. Mm-hmm. And the most, you know, insidious one of them all is the money system, which, you know, the only reason it works is because we all believe in it. You know, if you were to actually look at it from the point of view of a smart alien who was just looking at us from afar, he'd be like, oh, these guys are all falling for an old lizard scam.
Yeah, could you imagine?
It's like a clam trick game that they're all stuck in. It's a big trick.
A shell game.
Yeah, and now that doesn't mean we wouldn't have some sort of form of trade or trading our worth. Talk about that, right? We would have a way. We would always find a way, I'm sure, to trade value, and we might have some kind of monetary system, even in a more perfect society. I think there's no reason why that would necessarily be a problem. I think we wouldn't need it at a certain point if we evolved to a certain point. But up to a certain point, it would be, you know, I think we'd have a way to trade. Trade creates peace in a lot of ways, but what creates violence is creating shortages and owning
that
monopoly.
They love that trick.
Yeah, and telling you that your value equates to your pocketbook. What do you have? How much money you have? You know.
Yeah, that's always been what that frustrates me too, Leslie. Is that how people put? That's how they kind of even judge the beginning of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, you know, and I remember hearing somewhere that the number one thing that people ask when they start on their first date is what do you do for a living?
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Like that. So right from the start, you're putting this weird value on just a monetary, you know, who cares about what they're like inside or what they believe in or what do they, are they a good parent? Are they a good father?
What does she
do
for a living?
Or whether you got your money by ethical means.
Right.
I think it's like they're forgetting.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Right. That money could represent a person who works hard, a person who's disciplined, a person who's organized. But if you just look at it as dollars and cents, you could be missing some really important moral considerations.
Right. You could be a drug dealer.
Yeah.
You got tons of money, but your morality's shot as shit.
Hey, I'd almost rather if my kid was dating a drug dealer than a politician.
that's a show.
Drug dealer, what kind of drugs?
I mean, I think of it, okay, in today's world, you know, more and more people do not have the intrinsic skills to survive, the skills that to build a house or to grow food, or, you know, what happens if your means to you know, get resources is cut off. How many people will be in panic, right? So to me, it's a valuable person, you know, it's very valuable to have the skills of self-sufficiency and survival in very practical ways, right? So value is also, you know, people can have different values when you talk about it as a noun, right? Mm-hmm. But at the very base is life itself and valuing, you know, human, you know, living beings. And I want to just add too, like, we're here, you know, sharing all this information, but we're not perfect, you know, like I'm evaluating, you know, my relationship to the systems I've been a part of, to, I'm looking at my own mindset. I'm like, things are waking up in me all the time.
Me too.
We're not perfect in this. It's a process. It's a path. This is huge. You know, the more that you just start to be on this path and you open your eyes to things, the more you start to just see unraveling in front of you. And it can be very overwhelming and depressing and scary. And these are very valid emotions. So that, you know, really leads, you know, me to value the building of supportive communities. And there's some very cool, you know, little, I guess if you want to call it a community, communities building online, you know, chat groups and friendships that are developing around the core of values and morality. And when you have the foundation as morality and value, then that's a solid foundation upon which you build anything. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, Leslie, that, you know, it's a constant work. I check in with myself every day. I have to. And I'm still susceptible to the outer influences if I'm not careful. It's everywhere. Like, we're barraged with it every day. And if you're not always checking in, at least for me, on myself and questioning things and being very aware of the things going on, it's very easy to fall back into that. Like, I call it like a sleep almost, like you kind of get lulled back into this sleep. And so I think you make a great point. I'm always far, far from perfect. I would never even claim anything like that. I don't think anyone here would. I mean, it's a constant work. I'm always questioning things. I'm always changing my thoughts and beliefs on things as I learn more information. It's a work. Like, that's the word work. It means something in this context.
Yeah.
There's no like, you know, end point. It's not like, oh,
yeah, I've it doesn't end eventually.
Realization, and now I'm the one of the illuminated ones. No, you know, every day any of us can fall to the bitter pits that anyone else can, but that doesn't mean that we can't, at any given moment, also be sitting like very high on a real high cloud where you were in a good place, because we know we're doing a good thing and we're doing good about ourselves, you know? And I want more people to see how that feels, even in a shitty time, even in a bad time in history, you know, I can still feel some joy at times, by not letting the demons, the evil engulf me. And the way we do that, like Viktor Frankl in the concentration camp, is by finding some good we can put back out there, by putting something of value, making ourselves of value inherently because of the value of what we do and what we're putting out in the world, and getting better at our skill of doing that and putting something that really helps people, then it becomes quite evident. And in order to do that, that also requires the physical body to be engaged. And that's something we haven't discussed yet, but, you know,
Let's touch on it before we wrap it up here.
Every day we need to be doing something with our physical body to keep it in shape in order to be able to do this work.
Yeah. Yeah. If you value yourself, you will value your body. Because your body is your vehicle through this spiritual, you know, world, this world. It's a physical material world and it's a spiritual world. And so committing yourself to health habits is vital. You know, your mind isn't going to work well if your body's not working well. You know, they're interconnected.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's so important. And you see people, you know, when you look, people are getting more unhealthy and more unhealthy as time goes on. And there's many, like I said, it's another show. I mean, the reasons that people are at their state of health is failing, but you know, when you look at the quality of our food and what they're spraying in the air, and I mean, I get it. we're really getting, humanity is really taking a beating. But I really agree with what you and Chris are saying, that you have to work on your body. You have to, you have to start taking responsibility for what you're stuffing in your mouth.
That includes, like, the health aspect, too. Like, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been to, like, a Kaiser hospital or something, where I've been in these places. There's a lot of people that go to them regularly. And the hospital and the doctors are like their surrogate parents or something. Like, they don't see their own health as their own personal responsibility. They feel like, really? It's the doctors are in charge. And I've even heard people talk that way. Oh, the doctor said I'm supposed to do so-and-so, and I do feel a little funny about it, but, oh, you know. And we saw with the jabs.
With COVID,
and
damn
all
right.
The pressure they put on people with the masks, how yep. people were just rolling over. Because the truth is, deep down, so many people don't understand that deeper concept that your health is yours.
Exactly.
And well, there's no one else that has ownership over those choices. But
exactly. You. Yeah, I had a friend that didn't want to get the vaccine and didn't want it and fought. Like, he knew. And then, but still, it turned out his doctor said it was best. So he went and rolled up his arm and his sleeve. And I was just like, geez, man, like, maybe you should listen to yourself a little more and trust your, you know, everything was screaming to him not to do it. And I just like, dude, you don't have to do it. Well, my doctor said I have to. It's going to help me. And I'm like, you don't have to do it.
Like, who owns you?
Exactly. Say no.
Yeah, we own our own body. And I think we're also in the disconnection from nature. We're also losing trust in our own bodies to heal. And there's a self-healing impetus within us. And a lot of it is interrupted by toxins, right? Agreed. Toxins in our body, but also in our mind. And the work that those steps that Chris described is the path to really extricating ourselves from these, like, illusions that we're holding, that, you know, health comes from medicine, you know, or a vaccine, you know, and understanding what true health is and how it's created. And, you know, these are hard pills for people to swallow metaphorically, right? But if you, you know, part of valuing yourself is to eat well, learn about nutrition, learn about exercise and do it, you know, understand the toxins that we're bombarded with, and to do detoxification, to understand the dangers of chronic stress, the impact of that on our mind, body, and spirit, and to make decisions to manage that, you know, to set up our life in such a way that we are not driving ourselves into the ground. And that's huge, because that has a lot of implications on the whole economic system and everything. That's when you start to get mad.
Yeah.
And I just also wanted to say that as we do our mental health work, you know, our emotional healing, and we remove the blocks of self-loathing and shame and self-criticism and perfectionism and all these aspects of ourself that most of us take on that limit us and limit our potential. As we heal and befriend and get to know and then start to take agency, personal agency, from a conscious place of self, that we can start to fully become ourself and step into our potential, that there's a spontaneity of expression that will come and a confidence that comes with that. So, you know, as we are inviting people to step courageously into this work, which does, you know, include communicating with others and sharing information, that will come from the work on yourself and stepping into your spontaneous expression from a place of knowing your value.
That's so powerful. You're so right, Leslie. Wow. And I'm thinking too, like, there's so many things we can talk about. Like, I got another 100 questions, but I think of the value, like, how they push people, and you were kind of touching on this. I think of people, they're so just, it's hard to get in tune with yourself when you're run ragged. And I think that they're, yeah, you know, all by design. You have people that are working 2 jobs, 3 jobs, and hardly sleeping. They're not eating healthy. A lot of people, I mean, there's a lot, I get it. I always say I get it. I always try to bring it back to you know, real world. And like, I, because I just see that people are, I know people that they don't have time to do anything. And it, so it's complicated. It's a dance. It's a complicated dance, I can say. And I think you bring great points up. And but I think rest is a big one, too, that people are lacking. And I'm having a deja vu right now, so I have to say this. Rest like whoever's dog is snoring in the background. Is that your dog, Leslie?
That's Hurley.
That's Hurley.
Oh, my God. I was like...
She's in a lot of my videos, her sounds. Yeah.
I just had to bring... I'm having a deja vu about that comment. It's like it was kicking me. It was like, and I was just thinking, like, you know, people have to chill, just like that dog in the background. He's just living life.
She knows when she needs to rest. She just does it. You know? She lives. She's in tune with her body's needs.
I've just been listening. I'm like, this dog is out cold.
You know, Rick, I just want to repeat something which I think is very quotable.
Absolutely, yes.
And you said it's hard to tune into oneself when you're run ragged.
Yeah.
I think everyone needs to really, like, reflect on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it's also just, it's hard to tune into yourself when you're distracting yourself all the time with, you know,
good
superficial
point.
Feel goods, you know, and dopamine hits.
That's a good. Yeah.
I got two more good quotes for you.
Absolutely. I would love to hear them.
These are both Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves.
Mm. Right. Yeah,
those who have a why to live can bear almost any how.
Yeah.
That's a powerful one, actually.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
And, you know, there's also a motivation around... that we get from others, right? You know, there was a little video kind of thing that I ended up posting on Facebook, and it was a horse stuck in the mud. And, you know, these ranchers or, you know, shepherds trying to get the horse to come out, and they couldn't figure out how to get the horse out. And then it shows that they brought all these other horses and had these horses sort of run around the other horse and, you know, around the mud puddle or whatever it was. And just this horse's spirit was ignited seeing the other horses running and there. And it brought up from the inside this like fight. And you could see the horse starting to respond and access strength that it didn't have access to before, because it's a mental spiritual energy that we want to be with our tribe. We want to be free, but what for, right? If it's just to be alone, that's not very motivating, right? But if we see freedom and we see love and people to be with, you know, and we see our meaning and purpose in connection to others, then that is a deep motivator to get us, pull us out of these the muck, you know.
Yeah, like that story that you just told me, that you just told about the horses, really hit me. I don't know why, like, it just it's really hit me, guys. I don't know if it's because of my condition or what it is, but you telling that story, Leslie, just really hit me. Like, I mean I just think of how many times I've been stuck like that horse in the mud. Like, I feel like I'm drowning at times, like, and for these conditions I deal with. But you surround yourself with amazing, positive people, and it changes you so quickly when you're just, I don't know, like, you're around people that pick you up and encourage you and make you want to strive to be better and like push you, you know, and like, you know, tough love when you need it, but also to be that empathetic person too, you know, that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, in that book, I'm so focused tonight on this book, you know, Man's Search for Meaning, but it really hits hard. I really recommend people to read this book because it's, you know, very pertinent to this discussion and changing oneself and changing one's point of view and feeling like you are, you know, living to your full purpose. But one thing he described, in there was that, you know, like people would die in the concentration camp fairly often, you know, and he would say that you could tell when someone was going to die because they'd smoke their last cigarette. Mm-hmm. And what he meant by that, he described it wasn't just that they say I'm smoking my, he was like, it was a look on their face. It was the way they held their body. You could see it from a mile away when someone was, you know, quote unquote, smoking their last cigarette. He could, he described it, you know, and in so many ways in our society and in our world, I've noticed that in certain people's demeanor or their affect or their view on life, they've sort of already smoked their last cigarette or something, you know, like they kind of made give up. Choice.
Huh? Yeah. They just kind of give up.
Right. Wow. So, I mean, well, we were like, just like those horses, that's what we're doing is we're running around. We're running around the horse in the pit trying to, you know, and that reminds me too. Remember that one presentation I shared, the scene from The Neverending Story?
Mm-hmm.
And Atreyu's out there with his horse in the muck, and it's the a swamp of sadness or something, right? And if you allow yourself to get sadness, sad, the swamp sucks you down even more, and his horse just basically does that. His horse smokes his last cigarette, and he's just screaming at his horse. He's like, come on, you got to try. You got to try.
Right.
You know, and that's how I felt, you know, so often in my life, leading up to meeting people like Kripp Rick and Leslie Powers, that just over and over trying to talk to people about things that I thought are so important and just feeling like they just wanted to smoke their last cigarette.
Exactly.
You know, they don't want to go with me.
Yeah.
On this mission.
Great point. But I got to wrap it up, guys. I'm sorry, Chris. We got 2 minutes left, and I want to make sure I give both you and Leslie a chance. Let people know, guys. Chris, you go first. Where can people find your work and check out your content? And same with you, Leslie, and we will end the show with you guys letting people know where they can find you.
EndEvil.life or ChrisJansen.com. And last name is JANTZEN.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And you, Leslie?
Yeah, my website is alivethrive.life. Both Chris and I are on the One Great Work Network. I have Odyssey channel and YouTube channel. I'm part of a interview series called Dissolving the Divide with Derek Bartolacelli. So you can
on Odyssey.
On Odyssey.
Yeah, Odyssey, yeah.
And I just want to...
Oh, freedomundernaturallaw.com.
Oh, and Freedom Under Natural Law is a wonderful conference that we're part of hosting. And I just want to add here, this is a spiritual and a psychological war that we're in.
Yeah.
And understanding our deep value for just being alive, it gives us an opportunity to have great purpose and meaning on Earth right now.
Absolutely.
And this war needs all of us to do
absolutely
our work.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Chris. Thank you so much. Leslie, thank you so much for taking
thank
the
you
time and joining me. This was the show I've been looking forward to. I love yous both. I love all you listeners. Keep doing what you do. Both of yous, you are amazing. I'll see you next week, guys.
Thank you so much, Chris.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody, listening.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen, with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal.
consider yourself served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that.